Welcome to CDH Conversations. I'm Rita Biermann, a director at CDH, and I head up the knowledge management team. And joining me today, I have two amazing colleagues, Albie van Vuren and Lindy Kutsia. They will introduce themselves to you in a minute, but we would like to share some of our background, our history, our journey, our passions, and all of this within the context of a very exciting business and a very exciting piece of technology that this business created. Albie, can we start with you, please?
Thanks for inviting me. I must say I feel privileged to be in the present company. So my background a little bit is I'm a lawyer, have practiced as a lawyer in one of the big five law firms in South Africa, then jumped over the fence to become in-house counsel at the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. And I was very fortunate to join the JSE at a time when it was going through a complete renewal of all of its business processes, the way it looked at itself. It went from a club of stockbrokers to being a listed company on itself. It was a very exciting time. And what happened in my mind was a shift between being legal counsel to someone and being much more of a strategic project implementation type person while I was there. And that piqued my interest into looking more at processes, how we do things, the technical side of running a business. And of course, my background is legal. I then flipped back over the fence again into one of the big law firms and joined the management team where I looked very much at the practice of law. How do you do things simpler, better, faster? How do we become more profitable? What systems do we use? What processes do we use? And after 5 years of doing that at a single law firm, I realized that probably all law firms need that kind of thinking. And so I started my own consulting firm, Strategic Pulse Consulting, where I now work with a host of players in the legal services industry. So not only law firms, but also law faculties at universities who train our budding new lawyers, and also legal tech companies who provide the technology to help us do law better. And in this process, my paths crossed with Rieta. Just when Rieta was starting to think about Law Labs and what it can do, and it was just a meeting of minds and a meeting of purpose on what we want to achieve, and which really is bring all of those wonderful practices and processes and systems and tools that we have available at big law firms to smaller law firms, to law clinics, to people who would not otherwise have access to it, and to apply the same thinking in getting them to improve their businesses, compete more effectively, provide better services to their clients. So why I find myself now involved in Law Labs, an entity with whose purpose I really identify very closely.
Thank you, Albie. You've done some really exciting things. And I think it's important to celebrate each path, each bit, because together it's made you who you are. It's given you the set of experiences you've had and the insights that you have. And we would never have been able to build Law Labs and the technology that it built without you. And especially your very strong strategic insights into what makes a little law firm or a big law firm operate and your project management skills. Lindy, we met also through Law Labs and through our building of the technology. And I know that you're a commercial lawyer and your strong street law background is also fascinating. So do you mind also touching a little bit on that?
Thank you very much for the invitation and kind words. Yeah, I'm Lindy Kutsia. I'm an academic lawyer. And as Rieta rightly said, I specialize in corporate law and insolvency, but I also founded the street law program at the Nelson Mandela University at the then University of Port Elizabeth in the early 90s. And street law is, and I think that's where one can link it to the Law Labs program, a street law's fundamental focus is about improving the legal literacy of the person in the street. We all studied law to learn that, you know, ignorance of the law is no excuse. But if we're quite honest with ourselves, only people who study law really have the privilege to be able to know what the laws say, or to at least know where to go and look should they be unclear of what the law says. So in street law, we specialize in simplifying the law and then using participatory training methods to teach our students how to teach other people about the law. There's research that reinforces and says that if you get somebody to teach somebody else, they improve their own knowledge on the subject matter. And that is where we departing from. The participatory training methods that we specialize in is based on the premises that nobody comes to you as an empty vessel that you have to fill up with knowledge. You need to get people involved in order to have a dialogue and a dual discussion. And all of this fundamentally is about improving access to justice. And street law programs across the world and in South Africa as well work closely with the law clinics at university, the law clinics providing legal services to indigent communities, whereas the street law program will provide that preventative legal education going forward. A while ago, I had a pilot project where we combined law clinics and street law into what I call a mobile law clinic project, where we started with, first of all, doing empirical research to determine what do people know about the law? Where are their needs? What is it that they don't know? Then to design lesson plans based on that. Our street law students would then go out and train in the community. And thereafter, we would follow that up with an actual live mobile law clinic where we provided legal services to community members. And it's in that sphere, when I became deputy dean, I became involved in this project. I'm involved or responsible for undergraduate learning and teaching in the faculty. And therefore, one of the biggest things is to make sure that we teach our law students and prepare them for entry into the legal profession. And this particular project provided the unique opportunity to expose our students to software that they would encounter in practice and to incorporate that into our training. So the Hyrule project has been incorporated into our law clinic module at the university, which is part of curriculum, and our students on a daily basis work on that particular software when capturing information at the law clinic.
I'm glad you at least mentioned, although in passing, that you are the deputy dean and you know what you're doing and your passion and where it really lies in access to justice and effective training of students is evident in how you describe yourself and your background. You lead with, what are we trying to achieve? You lead with, we want to make a difference. You want to make a difference. So everybody has touched a little bit on Law Labs and Hive Law. And I've deliberately been a little bit quiet first about what this is, because it's important to understand the people who form part of it. And then let's tell you about the business. So next, we're going to tell you about Law Labs, what Law Labs is, what it does, and why all these various role players have come together to try and make a difference in people's lives. Before I even start, I want to again reiterate what others have said. Our point is to make a difference within our industry, to make a difference to the lives of people who depend on services such as the street law services that universities render, the mobile law clinic that Lindy has gotten off the ground at the Nelson Mandela University, and always the law clinics that at pretty much every university in South Africa you will find. These entities, these people do unbelievable work to give access to justice to people who otherwise would not have had that. And at the same time, they use that to train their law students in order to be ready for practice. So Law Labs had its origin in an effort by Cliff Dekker-Hofmeyr to bring to life the obligations that rest on it as a law firm, and to do so in a way that meets both the words and the spirit of the various pieces of legislation that compel businesses in South Africa to participate in BBBE initiatives, skills development initiatives, employment equity initiatives. We said, all right, we have to do it. We will do it. We want to do it, but we want to do it in a way that makes a difference. But we had to think about, how do we do that? How would we give effect to these lofty ideals? How would we make a difference to legal literacy? How would we give access to justice? And we thought, well, where is there a gap in that that we might have an impact on? And the biggest gap that we could identify in conversation with the Nelson Mandela University is that there is an inequity in access to the technology and access to some of the tools that large law firms use when you look at it from the perspective of a small law firm or a law clinic or a university. So how would the university train their students to be ready for legal practice if they don't have access to the same technologies, if they don't have access to the same tools? You said, well, surely this is something we can impact. In conversation with very smart people who know what they're doing and who've built technology in the past, we arrived at the conclusion that the most effective way to provide this bridge, a bridge between how large law firms operate and how students at a university is trained, is to build technology within the context of the technology set that universities already use. But so started the journey of forming a business that had its intention to build this technology that would ultimately be used at the universities. Now I'm going to hand over to Albie. How do you feel about how would technology bridge this gap? And how would this achieve the lofty ideals of access to justice, legal literacy, and all the other things we've discussed?
Once you've worked in a big law firm, you understand the vast array of tools they had at their disposal. It literally covers everything from the inception of the first contact with a client to onboarding them, to managing the relationship while you're doing the work, to managing all the documents that you create, maintain for them, to filing papers in court, to managing your diary, making sure you don't miss deadlines, to the absolute mammoth financial systems that sit behind that, which allow you to capture time, to bill an invoice, to track the payment of those invoices, to track your own profitability, to make assessments of which clients and matters are the most profitable to you and where you should be applying your efforts. And all of this done with the dual purpose always of running an obviously a successful business, but also always making sure that you're delivering the best possible service to your client. I think what few people realize is that there is not one system that you can acquire which will cover all of that. The systems, the tools which law firms, big law firms use, consist of multiple different providers, multiple different systems running off different platforms, all of which need to be integrated and talk to one another, and all of which in the end results in a very complicated IT picture, which somebody needs to do. And as soon as you hear complicated, you also have to immediately hear costly. So there's a clear threshold that people need to be able to achieve from a financial strength point of view to be able to access all of these systems. And just to note, even the most successful big firms find it a bitter pill to swallow. If the costs add up, even if you are financially very successful. So what Hive Law does is it cuts across all of those different systems, everything that a law firm will require, and builds it off a SharePoint platform, Hive Law itself, which is sort of the hive around which various other modules can be delivered. So Hive Law itself allows you to do the client onboarding, matter onboarding. There is a component which allows you to do document management, not only of your Microsoft suite of Excel and Word and PowerPoint, but also slightly more complicated document sets like email, making sure that you can also manage your emails effectively in your document management system, not only in your email system, and allows you to access a module which helps you create templates more easily through the Express Docs module, and then also integrates with an accounting platform, Law Practice, which gives you the whole full suite of accounting services specifically for law firms, which we all know has got very specific needs relating to, for example, trust funds, just to mention one, which needs to be quite a specialized tool to cover that. And Law Labs has done all the thinking behind which services, which systems are going to be best, the most cost effective, and how can we integrate them on behalf of our clients, even before we go to the client. So there's a whole lot of thinking, a whole lot of decision making, and a whole lot of cost that the clients ultimately benefit from by the use of Hive Law. It is everything that you need to be able to run a small law firm, whether it's a law clinic in a university, or whether it's an NGO, which does not have a big budget, obviously, or whether it is a small law firm with its own set of clients. And so that's what we aim to achieve. And that system, of course, is backed up by the Law Labs team, who are lawyers themselves, so they know exactly the challenges which a lawyer faces day to day. Some of them are tech experts, so they can give advice on that area. Some of them are user experience design experts, so we design the system to be as user-friendly as possible. Some of them are project managers like myself, and that just allows our clients a big leap forward in the tools that they are using to service their clients, to run their businesses, and to compete more effectively in the marketplace. And obviously, from a university's point of view, from Lindy's point of view, we are giving her students a view into life in practice, which is much more realistic to what law practice really looks like. I think the biggest shock for most of us transitioning from academic learning into now actually starting to practice as a lawyer is all the extra things outside of law that we need to understand. And Hive Law just helps students get an insight into what those are before they even get to practicing law.
That was an absolutely brilliant explanation, Albie. I think we've made great inroads in that ideal of providing a setting where people who otherwise would not have been able to afford the technologies can now get access to it. And by getting access to it, they might become more efficient. They might be able to deliver a service to their clients that the clients deserve. Something that again resonates with me as you spoke, Albie, and it reminded me, Lindy, of how many times in our process I have been amazed at the mountain that lies in front of most of our tertiary institutions and the Nelson Mandela University specifically. But rather than me telling our audience what these mountains are and the things that you have to deal with on a daily basis in order to give your students the best possible chance to make their way in the world, can you share a little bit about what are universities facing in the sense of who are their students? Where do they come from? What do they already know by the time that they reach your doors? And what are some of the challenges that you have to overcome in trying to get them ready for legal practice?
The type of student, and I can only speak for Nelson Mandela University, the majority of our students come from indigent communities themselves. The majority are funded by NSFAS. One of the values of the university, specifically Ubuntu, that recognizes that you are part of the community first, we like to instill some kind of responsibility. And I think Ubuntu encapsulates that very well, that if you have the privilege to be able to be educated, because let's face it, it is a huge privilege, then you must share whatever you get with everybody else. And that is why at universities, our law students, they come from really disadvantaged backgrounds to when they enter here. Yeah, some of them have phones, but a lot of them are taught for the first time about computers, specifically those that come from rural areas. Now, if you know, there is always the pressure to adapt in education, to keep abreast with the developments in technology. But sometimes the wheels in law move quite slowly. And if you look at legal brief and the kind of things that you will see there are challenges. Specifically, if you look at AI, for example, and the ethical challenges that the courts are facing and that we are facing. So for us, the big thing at Mandela is, how are we going to embrace technology in such a way that it is ethically used? And I think that Hive Law is one of the things that have provided our students with the opportunity to be exposed to the kind of case management system that they will encounter in practice. You have different kinds of law clinics at different kinds of faculties. What Mandela University has is a live client clinic. In other words, we are based on the Missionville campus, where indigent members of the community can come. They pass the means test, we render free legal services to them. And then the software there is made available. So the students are taught how to use that software, how to incorporate it into their daily lives. The final year law students all register. They are compelled to register for a module called legal practice. And legal practice involves the work at the law clinic and also participation in the street law program. Now, part of those challenges that we face, over and above wanting to serve the indigent community, just spare the thought that we are getting students from indigent communities that we have to capacitate to serve other people from indigent communities. So that comes with its own set of circumstances. But just on Mandela Day last Friday, I had a team of volunteer students doing a mobile law clinic in Erie, and it's gang-ridden. My team of volunteers was so big that I almost had too many volunteers and a little space for the clients in the community to go in there. So what we lack in material possessions, we make up in heart. And that I can certainly say from our students. So I think within academia, the big challenge is to remain up to date, to ensure that we know what does the profession require. A lot of you hear universities talk and say there are so many unemployed graduates. Even in the legal fraternity, we hear of students that have qualified with LLB. A lot of them get articles, but then once the articles are over, they are not retained and they sit without work. So that's what you grapple with all the time, is how do we prepare our students so that that it distinguishes them from other law students and makes them compete a little bit more differently when applying for positions out in the legal fraternity. That, I think, is one of the big challenges. And at our faculty, we have decided we will embrace technology. You can argue as much as you want to, but technology isn't going to go away. And if we want to make our students competitive, then they have to have the technological skills that will set them apart. And I think what is nice, if I just think of the document generation capacity within Hive Law, it allows you to generate a document that you don't have to spend so much time on it, but that you can actually spend the time on the legal analysis and solving intricate legal problems and have and use technology smart so that it does the work for you where it can do the work, that it frees up your time to be able to focus on the difficult legal analytical work that legal practitioners sometimes have to do.
Absolutely. What AI and generative AI specifically is going to do for us remains to be seen, but it can only make your life difficult again, Lindy, in terms of teaching. It certainly is making my life difficult trying to grapple with how am I going to train young lawyers to become senior lawyers when they have access to generative AI tools that we simply don't know how that's going to impact on how they learn. Will they learn, or will they simply default to using a tool that can do the job just as well as they can? So it's an ongoing journey. And I think we'll only develop more and more and more modules within Hive Law to try and grapple with exactly that.
I think the challenge is a large language module like your ChatGPT that isn't exposed to everything on the internet, where you have a facility that can go and research reported judgments and cases and help with it. But what I want to tell you is very important. I've done this in my own lectures, and you cannot tell students ignore it. So in one of my lectures last year, I gave the students a prescribed judgment. I said, come on, take out the AI tools that you use, because we know they all have them. So I gave them the prescribed. It was a corporate law case. And I said, okay, ask ChatGPT to generate a summary for you. Guys, it generated a summary with a big hallucination. Now, the students had studied that particular judgment, and when we looked at the summary from ChatGPT and the hallucination it gave you, it quoted eviction, people being evicted. It was, I'm telling you, I had dumb luck in getting that one done. But to show, to use that as a learning tool, and I think where this is starting, it has so much potential that technology can keep up and develop so that we can automate those things that could be done automatically in order then to make the time available for the complex legal analysis that is required.
I could not agree with you more. And I believe strongly that there remains a role for lawyers in a world where AI is capable of delivering some of the tasks that lawyers would otherwise have delivered. The secret is going to be in finding where is our role and being able to adapt. And that's why it's so important to have partners partners across the whole industry, from academia through to practice, through to the specialists like LB, who advise others on strategy and the future of their law firms, who all believe that, you know, don't see the limitations, see the opportunity. Work out how to do this and work out how to do it well. And I think that that typifies all of us. Now, I'm going to ask you something, Lindy, a little bit controversial, possibly, that the leadership team from the various role players involved with Hive Law and with Law Labs are all women. That doesn't mean that our male colleagues are not important and are not amazing contributors to what's happening here and what we're delivering. But do you agree with me that women do bring a specific approach and, in my experience, a little bit more collaborative sometimes than what we are necessarily given credit for or what we celebrate in ourselves? We try to get things done. Am I right?
Oh, totally, Rita, I totally agree with you. I think, and this isn't gender bashing or anything, it's just the reality that women approach things differently to men. And I think we find solutions in different ways as well. And what my experience is working with powerful women like yourselves and LB is, if you have a female team, females tend to build other females up rather than break them down. For me as a woman, it is great to see the Albies excel and the Rietas excel so that I can celebrate the excellence. And from that kind of perspective, for the team that we're involved in, is very different to the team where it is about who gets most sunlight on them. And that, I think, is evident in this female team that I can speak of. It is always about the broader purpose. It is always about improving access to justice and legal literacy. That focus is never lost. This is Hive Law. The individuals that make it doesn't need to be splashed around and celebrated. What is more important for us is to get the job done that we have set out to do.
That is brilliantly stated. I mean, I literally could not have thought of a better way to describe it, but it's exactly my experience too. Albie, do you have something to add from your perspective?
There's no ego. There is a shared purpose, and that purpose drives what we do. And I kind of feel that's the culture, the ethos which drives Law Labs. We know what we want to achieve, and we are all just pushing to get there, and we'll do what it takes. But there's no ego attached to it. Nobody is going to win the prize at the end. It's the law clinic. It's the students. It's the people in small law firms. It's their clients, ultimately, who will be the winners. Is it exclusively a female thing? I don't know. I think it is very much informed by empathy, shared thinking that need to get it done. So yeah, I love that. I think also, in my experience, the most successful integration of females in business is where it happens organically. And the way that Law Labs has grown and the people involved with it has happened organically. It's almost like 3 years down the line, we stopped and looked around and went, oh, look, there are so many females involved here. But it's never been an issue to have females involved. It just happened. And the culture and the ethos and the work ethic just flows from that, I think.
Oh, beautifully said. Thank you, Albie. To close us off, I want each of you to share some thoughts around how do you see the future develop, especially for our female students. Do you fear for them that there are still limitations in your experience that they might face when they reach practice or whichever part of practice or the legal industry they end up in? Do you fear for them? Do you see the future as bright? Any words of wisdom that you can share? Let's start with Lindy.
Thanks, Rita. I think there are exciting opportunities out there for women. Personally, I sometimes worry whether the working world still expects of female graduates to work in a workplace that is sort of set up by male dominance and caters to male dominance, and that workplaces have not sometimes adjusted to the needs of women. Tell you why I say that. Every year, we watch our graduates walking across the stage, and we graduate more females than males. And in that process, we speak to the profession, and the profession say, but We are the females. So what we are currently grappling with is our female graduates are going somewhere. We're not sure. They don't seem to be dominating in litigation. So a question that we need to answer, and I'm speaking quite frankly, is what can we do and how can one adapt to make it not as alien sometimes for women in the working world? You know, it is so sad that somebody said to me the other day, that one now wants maternity leave. She just took a man's seat in a classroom and studied with taxpayers' money, and now she wants to go on maternity leave. And I thought to myself, good grief, are we in 2025 in South Africa that people can still make those kind of statements? I ended up saying to the person, but who gave birth to you? Wasn't that a woman? And we had this intricate discussion and saying, but isn't it because we are not adapting? We are expecting of women to survive in the workplace that we have created. We are still at certain levels so intolerable not to accommodate, not to consider that a woman comes with a unique set of skills, but also with unique circumstances. And to what extent are workplaces adapting to make it possible? I would like to see a situation where women excel, not because they could make it in a man's world, but because they could make it in the working world that accommodates the unique needs that women have.
Thank you, Lynnie, and thank you for the honest response, you know, because I think it does no favors to anyone to suggest that there are not challenges and one should not be aware of the challenges and one should not feel alienated in your own workplace. I could not agree more. And Albie, can you share some thoughts from your experience as well? How do young women approach their career development and how do they think about themselves in order to take their place and demand to be viewed as the equal participants that they are?
I've been incredibly lucky in my career, Rita, in that I've joined organizations where gender has never been an issue. So my role models have always been, you know, when I grew up, my professional role models, if I can call them that, they've always been women who, certainly from my perspective as a young budding lawyer, have just done their job. For them, there was no sense of I'm being held back or I have to do more. And, you know, listening to Lindy and listening to lots of women, most women, in fact, and their experience, I think I've been incredibly lucky in that way. But I now, and you know, I have the amazing privilege of mentoring some young women entering their careers. And it is tough because they've got a lot of competing desires in their lives of also wanting to be mothers, wanting to have good careers. I think it's hard. I think it's particularly hard for young women because they do not yet have the experience, the self-confidence to be able to just put their foot down and say that is not acceptable. But I also have a great sense of excitement for young women in the professional world. And I think it's very much informed by the experience that I've had. And that's maybe something that we need to think about is mentoring young people and giving them that different perspective of what's happening and how they can approach situations. You know, there's almost like a life experience wisdom kind of element that you would like to impart to young women just starting their careers to give them that extra leg up in dealing with complicated situations.
I agree with you fully that it starts with conversations between those of us who have thrived or survived in an industry that was built based on a different gender, where not the same requirements existed, and that change is a bit slow. And yes, speaking about our experiences and providing a sounding board for young entrants into the industry to just chat to us and ask us and share experiences might well be the starting point. What I can say is that maybe we also have a little bit of a blinkered approach by the time you reach our stage of the career, that we look back and we don't think about the things that we've lived through as particularly gender-based or a particular challenge, but we may have forgotten how hard it was. And there was just no other alternative, so we just lived through it. But conversations is where it starts, and sharing and never assuming that you know the other's experience or you know the other's feeling, and trying to think back, how did we experience it? And how can we possibly guide and help and assist the youngsters? And the mere fact that you now come into a law firm them, and you're one of the majority as opposed to one of the minority, does not mean that you're not still going to face challenges, you're not still entitled to be heard, that you still sometimes can have a bad day. Reach out to the people around you, I think is the advice from the colleagues on this call. We're certainly there to try and share your load. We may or may not be the right person to talk about it, but you can always give us a chance. So thank you so much, colleagues. That was a fascinating conversation. I hope you all found it fascinating and interesting as well.
Thanks, Rita. It was certainly lovely.
That was great. Always lovely to talk to you.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.